We're going to study the season of David's life as a fugitive. David has had to flee because Saul is now openly seeking to take his life. And that we'll start in 1 Samuel chapter 21. And David seeks out help from Ahimelech, the high priest, who is in the town of Nob. And David comes to him and asked for bread for his men. So David's not alone. Remember, David was leading 1,000 men, a division of Israel's army. And these men saw his integrity. They saw how he loved the Lord. They saw, and they stayed loyal to him. And he probably had to confide in them what he was having to do. So now, there's some men with him, but they had to. This shows how quickly they had to flee. Because if they don't even have provisions, he's stopping by and asking, you know, the priest if they have some provision, and they don't have anything but the sacred bread and the showbread that they made daily. And it's interesting, David chooses not to fully confide in Ahimelech. Any thoughts of why? Why David didn't tell him he was fleeing from Saul? Any thoughts about that? Why wouldn't he tell him what he was doing?
He was probably worried about his safety.
Well, you know what I think it is? He knew that if he told Ahimelech, he might make him accountable, an accomplice. So he's probably trying to keep him blameless. Is that what you said back there, Miss Dina? Okay, who?
Peggy.
Yeah, Peggy. It's a good observation. This Ahimelech wouldn't know anything, so in a way, David was trying to preserve his innocence. But Ahimelech gives him the sacred bread, and David asks, "Is there any weapons here?" And Ahimelech says, "The only thing we have is Goliath's sword." So David says, "I'll take it. There's none like it in all the land." So they're not exactly well armed; they're just on the run, and now they have a little bit of bread and a weapon or two. But there's this guy named Doeg the Edomite. He's there. And he sees this interaction. He hears the conversation. He sees what Ahimelech gives David. And he decides he's going to go and tell Saul. You know, there's always someone seeking to gain some personal benefit from being an informant. Well, Doeg took his advantage of that. So from there, David flees to Gath. Now, this is amazing because Gath is a Philistine city. And you know who's been David's been fighting for the last several years? Philistines. The Philistines. So why would he go there? Why would David go to a Philistine city? Think about it. Right, that Saul's not going to chase him there. And he's hoping that they'll give him kind of a refuge and allow him to stay in a city, because the other option is he's going to have to live out in the country in caves and hills and be camping out all the time. So he goes to this Philistine city, the city of Gath, and this is what the scripture says. Then David arose and fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servant of Achish said to him, King, is this not David, the king of the land? They had heard that he had been anointed. News had traveled that David had been anointed king of Israel. Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? Now David's in the middle of a Philistine city talking to a king, and he hears this. And he suddenly realizes he is in trouble. He's in a dangerous spot. And so you know what he does? Here's what it says. Now David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. So he changed his behavior before them and pretended madness in their hands. He started acting like he had lost his mind. He started scratching on the doors of the gate and drooling, letting drool go down on his beard. Well, he must have been a pretty good actor, because the king Achish said to his servants, look, You see, the man's insane. Why have you brought him to me? Have I need of madman that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? Well, you know, God uses some strange things to help deliver, you know, his servants.
Amen.
And so David was able to escape out of this situation. And we're in chapter 22. David therefore departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. Isn't that a great place to be? He's going to live there for a while. So when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down to him there. And I would imagine that at least at this time, they're bringing provisions. They're bringing at least some supplies and some meat and some vegetables and some grain, you know, and to outfit. But here's, look at, yeah, Priscilla.
Mm-hmm. So now all this is happening just
because because King Saul has become convinced that David's trying to kill him. And that's what he's telling everybody. He's telling everybody that David's out to kill him. When reality, it's his problem. David's been faithful all this time. There's no truth to it. But now look at David. Look at who the Lord brings to David. You know, it said, Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I shall draw all men unto me. Well, look who the Lord was drawn to David. Everyone who is in distress, everyone who is in debt, everyone who is discontented gathered to him. In other words, all the misfits, you know, a lot of poor people, a lot of people that weren't in good situations. What a great group of people, you know, to have. Well,
cutthroat.
I mean, just, you know what? But you know, why would those kind of people be drawn to David? Why? Because they knew him to be a person who cared. They knew him to be fair and righteous and just. And you know, if you don't feel someone cares about you or is be willing to help you, you don't go. But David had a reputation, and that allowed people who felt there was hope to come to him. So he became captain over everyone who was in debt and everyone who was in distress and all that were discontented. And there were about 400 men with him. Yeah, Brother Rudy.
But this man, even though they were at the bottom of the social ladder,
yes,
they knew that David was going to take
yes,
care of them.
They certainly
and
did.
And consequently, they gave him their complete alliance.
They did. And in some of these men, some of these 400 men that were loyal with David, they were risking their lives
yes,
associating with David. Some of these men became known as David's mighty men. And they had seen God's favor on David. And they recognized that, and they sacrificed their own comfort. Because now these men are on the run. Many of these men have homes. Some of them have families. And here they are, fugitives on the run, and they've chosen to associate with a man who the king and all the king's forces are trying to kill. So now they, in essence, have joined with a man on the run, and they're accepting this by faith that this is what God would have them do. So David went from there, from the cave of Adullam, to Mizpah of Moab. And because, you see, David's family fled to the cave because they were now probably in danger also. Well, David didn't want his family, his dad, staying in the conditions of the cave. So he thought, I'll go to the land of Moab, to the king of Moab. And he requests from the king, please let my father and mother come here with you till I know what God will do for me. He just wasn't sure what the days ahead looked like. So he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with the king of Moab all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then it says, now the prophet Gad, this is where Gad is introduced for the first time. Who has been the prophet in the story up until now? Samuel. But now, we don't hear much of Samuel from here this point out. We don't know if he's still alive at this time or not, but Gad is now the prophet. And so Gad speaks to David, "Do not stay in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. So David could have stayed here in more comfort, but he listened to the word of the Lord through the prophet. The Lord wanted him in the land of Judah. So he goes, he departed, and he went to the forest of Hereth. Now Saul is aggressively pursuing David. And while he's aggressively pursuing David, looking, getting reports, having spies go out everywhere to try to find news where he's hiding. Remember, they didn't have satellite. They didn't have the kind of surveillance capability. They had to see with their eyes or hear with their ears where someone was at. So, and while they were doing this, Dog the Edomite comes and brings Saul a report. And Saul, of course, Doeg the Edomite tells Saul that David was given provisions and Goliath's sword by the Ahimelech, the high priest. So Saul summons Ahimelech the priest and all his father's house, in other words, all his relatives, and the other priests who were in Nob. Saul demands that they come where he's at. And here's the scriptures, what we read about that. Then Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him that he should rise against me to lie in wait as it is this day?" Do you see Saul's heart? There's a lesson for us in this. Is Saul's heart, is this true? Is David his enemy? Is David a threat to him? Look what it says, that he should rise against me to lie in wait. Do you see, when our own heart is corrupted, we project onto others a motive they don't even have. If we ourselves have been corrupted by evil, oftentimes we will assume that what someone else is doing is evil. We won't see it in the way it really is. Saul didn't see David as David really was. And the problem was his own heart. We need to be careful. The pure in heart will see God. If we're corrupted, we won't see clearly. Saul's heart is not right. And look, the high priest tries to reason with him. Ahimelech answered the king and said, "And who among all your servants is as faithful as David?" He is the king's son-in-law. the high priest was reminding, "You gave your daughter to this man who goes at your bidding. He's doing whatever you say and is honorable in your house." And he goes on. The priest says, "Did I just then, when he came to me, begin to inquire of God for it? Far be it from me. Let not the king impute anything to his servant." He's talking about himself. "Or to any in the house of my father, for your servant knew nothing of this, of all this, little or much." What he means by knew nothing, he knew nothing of supposedly David trying to rise against Saul. The high priest had no idea that this is what Saul was thinking. Or, you know, remember, David didn't tell him why he was there. David had told him he's on urgent business for the king and he had to leave in a hurry. He's just trying to keep him protected. But you know what? Saul wouldn't have it. His heart is evil, and he even thinks the high priest is lying to him. It's a sign when we categorize someone as they are wrong, they have this bad motive. Oftentimes, the problem is our own heart. It's our own heart. Because love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And when love is operating in your heart, you're not quick to rush into categorizing someone as being in the wrong. You may see that they are in need, Maybe they are doing something wrong, but love will hope for them and leave room for God's grace to work in their life. Saul's heart was without any of God's perspective in it. And in his eyes, David is wicked. In his eyes, the high priest is wicked. And who's really wicked?
Him.
He's seeing evil. You know, there's you know, you've heard of this common denominator. You know, if those words look fuzzy, and your face looks fuzzy, and the hallway looks fuzzy, what's probably wrong?
What I'm seeing.
You know, our Lord said something. Take the beam out of your own eye first, and then you'll be able to see. Saul had such a large beam in his eye, there's no way he could see David clearly. There's no way he could see the high priest clearly.
In other words, he was different levels of paranoia.
Yeah, oh, very clearly, and just in a terrible state. And here's what the king said to the high priest: "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house." Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, "Turn and kill the priest," plural, "of the Lord, because their hand is also with David." He's assumed, nope, you helped the guy, you're on his side. Nope. And because their hand is also with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not tell it to me. You see what David was trying to protect him? It's not true. He did not know that David was fleeing for his life. He was told by David that he was on an errand for the king, an urgent matter. But fortunately, there are men who fear the Lord too much to listen to Saul. The servants of the king, they were Israelites. They were doing what the king told them, but they would not lift their hands to strike the priest of the Lord. They feared God more than they feared Saul at this point. But there's someone there who was willing to do it. Guess who?
Doeg
the Edomite, the informant. And the king said to Doeg, "You turn and kill the priest." So he was more than willing. This man was a reprobate. This man was evil. And so Doeg the Edomite turned and struck the priest. And on that day he killed 85 men who wore a linen ephod. And you know what? We struggle with this because guess who allowed this to happen? God allowed this to happen. We wrestle with things like that, don't we? He could have sent lightning or something, but God allows this to happen. And Doeg wasn't even finished. He went to the city where they lived, and he struck with the edge of the sword men, women, children, nursing infants, oxen, donkeys, and sheep with the edge of the sword. And you know what he gets for it? He gets rewarded by Saul for doing this evil thing. But we haven't read the whole story. Do you think it's going to go well for Doeg in the end?
No.
Nope, and it doesn't. We'll, later on, in as we go through the Bible, we'll see what happens to Doeg in the end. Because whatever a man sows, that shall he also reap. It may not happen right away, but just wait. His payday is someday. Yeah, Rudy?
I might be wrong, but I think that Doeg did not act alone.
No, he would have had to have help.
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
But anyone with him would be in the same attitude,
oh,
the same
yes,
mind, sure.
Course.
Yeah, Priscilla.
Some of the men that are still with the king, and they believe in God.
Yes, I think so. They've probably been influenced. Saul's convinced them that David is a threat. And so, yeah, but they're, yeah, I think so. They, yeah, they show a measure, yeah, that they have some faith, right. Now, one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the Lord's priest. You see, he didn't say Doeg did it, because remember, Doeg was following Saul's orders. So David said to Abiathar, I knew that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. David took it upon himself. I have caused the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me. Do not fear, for he who seeks my life seeks your life. But with me you shall be safe.
Yes.
Now we're in chapter 23. Now David, during this time when David's in the forest of there in Judah, he hears that the city of Keilah is under Philistine attack. So he inquires of God with Abiathar, the priest there, if he should go and fight. And the Lord tells him to go. And as he's preparing to go, David's men question him. What? You're going to go back to the land of Israel? I mean, they're trying to kill us, David. And so David goes and seeks the Lord again. I love that about him. He didn't just say, the Lord told me, forget it. You know, he's human enough to say, well, let me check again. Let me make sure. And God responded. God answered him again and told him to go. And then I love this about David's men. Okay, you ask the Lord again. If he told you, we're with you. So they didn't just say, no, we're not going. It's, you know, so it's okay to question your pastor. It really is okay to say, are you sure we should do that? And then if, trust me, pray for me. If I pray, say, yeah, I think so. Then say, okay, I'm with you. Don't tell me, so you don't think we should do that? Yeah. Okay, I prayed about it. Yeah, I think we should. Well, I'm not. I don't want to, that's not what I want. Now, if I'm missing it the second time, pray for me a little more. You know, make me pray again. You know, but these men show some integrity. They're not afraid. They're not afraid to ask questions. We need everyone's thinking. We need your input. You know, we need that. It's okay. It's a real help. Some people can actually see things. My wife can actually see things I miss sometimes. I know it's rare, but it really does happen. But it's just, but we're all in this together. David's seeking the Lord. His men aren't sure. They ask him. He seeks the Lord again. Then they receive the answer there, and they go. And what happens is the Lord gives the Philistines into their hands. And David and his men, they obtain all the livestock from this Philistine force. So, you know, could it be that that's why the Lord's telling them to go down?
Yeah.
Go down there. Not only will I give these Philistines into your hand, and I'll supply you a long time for your needs. So
Weapons also.
Livestock, weapons, and now get this. But David has this strange feeling while he's there in this city, because he could just choose to stay there. Now he's got this city. Because you would think that the people of the city he's just saved would just be, you know, protect him and be loyal to him. But he has to seek the Lord through Abiathar the priest. Because Saul hears from his spies that David has gone to Keilah, and he rallies a large force for war. So the Lord warns David that Saul will come down. And you know what the Lord also tells him? That the men of the city he just saved will hand him over to Saul. Well, that's gratitude, isn't it? You know, you just saved the city, and yet to continue to save their own necks, they're afraid of Saul. They'll betray you over to Saul, even though you saved their life. But God is warning him in advance through the high priest. David is continually seeking the Lord through these days, though he's having to live as a fugitive. So David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah and went wherever they could go. Now this just wherever they can happen to find, staying out of sight. And then it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah, and he halted the expedition. And David stayed in the strongholds in the wilderness and remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. Now, even though Saul sought him every day, this next slide will show you why it's not so easy to figure out where he's at. You see the cave of Adullam there up in the upper left-hand corner? You see Adullam there?
Yeah.
Okay, Keilah, you see where the city of Keilah was? All right. Now, from there, David escapes down to the forest of Ziph, down in this area. You see this area? This is what it looks like. There are, it's wilderness, and it's there, but there's lots of valleys and caves and mountains to hide in so that you can't be seen. That's why Saul couldn't find him. He's it's pretty rugged territory. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. And this something beautiful happens. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods, and he strengthened his hand in God. Isn't it a beautiful thing when you're really going through something and that there's that person that God has brought into your life? Because David and Jonathan were deeply close. They had a covenant of friendship together. And God used the son of the man trying to kill David to strengthen his hand in God. And here's what Jonathan said to David: "Don't fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." Wow. So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house. So Saul's pursuit of David was relentless, and this went on for an extended period of time. And the reason I want us to contemplate that is, remember, David was called from the field and anointed by the prophet Samuel to be the king of Israel. And then right away, he saw the power of God. He saw the victory over Goliath. And then when he went out with Saul's armies at first, you know, he had such success. The songs were about him. Saul has slain his thousands, David's tens of thousands. But God allowed David to enter a very difficult period, even with his favor on David. And this may have gone on for years, y'all. This could be 3 to 4 to 5 years being on the run, you know, forcing David and his men to be continually on the move under threat of attack. There's this one time when Saul's forces had been split into two groups, and David was trapped in this area on one side of a mountain, and both forces of Saul were coming around the mountain about to have David and his men trapped in a way they couldn't escape. And then right then, news came to that force that the Philistines had attacked, and both armies immediately abandoned the search to go protect where the Philistines were attacking. And David called that place the Rock of Escape. You know, so, I mean, God was not preventing the difficulty, was he? He allowed it to be a very difficult season, but he was there. You see, there are times that God intervenes, but he doesn't take us out of the entire difficulty. He still gives us a way of escape. He preserves us, but he will allow it to be pretty difficult for us. That's just part of what God does.
It's part of our spiritual formation.
It is.
So we don't like it during that time, but when we come on the other end, we can walk more confidently.
That's right. It says even of our Lord himself that although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things he suffered. It also says in Hebrews chapter 2, it was fitting that God, for whom all things are created, should make the author of our salvation perfect through suffering. So even Jesus was made complete and perfect and matured through suffering. And Eli is exactly right. This is a part of our own maturity. God uses difficulty to mature us. He puts us in trials and difficulties.
Psalms are so, this is where he wrote down his Bible.
Right. You've read in the Psalms, many of you love the Psalms, where David is wrestling with his own heart and mind. It's many of them were written during this season of difficulty. Rudy?
The thing is, we always see hardship from the negative point of view, but in reality, hardships are used by God to make us stronger.
That's right. And that's why
there is more than one instance in the Bible.
Let's think about painful things.
Yes.
In everything?
Give thanks.
It for in painful things. In difficult things. Give thanks. In sorrowful things. You know what? You say, but how can I give thanks if something's painful? Here's how. Thank God that He's with you in the pain. First of all, He's not going to leave you to hurt alone. He's with you.
Amen.
And secondly, thank God that through the pain, God will work together some good for you. You can be thankful.
I didn't realize about giving thanks in the pain until the time you told us give thanks, because that means you can still feel.
Yeah, you still.
You know,
right.
So that ever since then, I said, thank you.
I serve, by the grace of God, I served 7 years with Marines.
Mm-hmm.
And Marines, they instill in the Marines no pain,
no gain. Yeah. The scriptures are true. Here's good counsel from the book of James. Consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of various kinds.
That's it.
You have need of them. Why? That endurance could have her perfect work, so that you can be mature and complete, lacking nothing. We say that. So count it all joy. Count pain a joy. I mean, you're not thankful for the pain itself. What you're counting a joy is God has the ability to measure it, make it temporary, be with you, give you strength, and produce a benefit in it. That's what you're counting joy. And that's living by faith instead of feeling. That's how you walk by faith. You overcome by faith. Even difficulties, God works in for our benefit. See, there's a difference of being hurt and being harmed. Things hurt us, but God works in those to keep them from us being harmed. In all things, God works together for the good. He doesn't stop it from hurting, but he makes it beneficial. And this is why we don't murmur and we don't complain, because God's with us. It's difficult. We can admit that. We can admit being weak. We can admit being frail. We can admit, Lord, how much longer? Please, Lord, have mercy, Lord. I'm just a human. You know, it's okay. He knows that. But trust that He's there. Trust that He's watching. He's not asleep. You know, He's not asleep. All right, last slide, and we need to stop. David went up from there and dwelt in the strongholds of En-Gedi. And there's En-Gedi. Right there on the shores of the Dead Sea. He only moved about 10 miles further east from where he was. But man, he's deep in this area, high plateau, and he's gonna hang out there for a while. We'll have to pick up our study next week.
And it was in a place like that the Dead Sea Scrolls were found.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yep.
In one of the caves.
Lots of caves. There's lots of caves out there, right? And the one thing about out there is it doesn't rain a lot. You know, it's a drier area, but there's water, there's springs and things out there, so it's a little bit easier to be outside if you're not getting rained on all the time. Okay.